Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 30th of December, recording at 7:02 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture, long-term outlook for the various different asset classes and my last broadcast of the year. And it's been a very exciting year, but before I go into the long-term outlook, just a quick review of the week. In terms of stock markets, the Asian leaders continued to lead on the upside. Elsewhere, stock markets are generally firm, although a few cracks showing in some of the European uptrends, and particularly on Wall Street. In government bonds, not a great deal of action there, but mostly steady, at least in terms of the Western markets, less so the Japanese government bonds. And in terms of currencies, some of the commodity currencies, which had weakened against the US dollar in the week before last, started slightly earlier than that, recovered or started to recover a bit in here, particularly I'm thinking of the Australian dollar and the New Zealand dollar, which had been hit quite hard last week and the week before. Now, precious metals staged a stunning technical rally this week, and it's probably not over, although we may be seeing a consolidation. And petroleum contracts, they continue to show signs that they are bottoming out and likely to move higher. That will have some implications for stock markets if the forecast is correct. Okay, big picture, long-term outlook. The most important thing concerning 2006 is, will we or won't we see an interest rate, short-term interest rate induced or some other wild card factor induced correction, which is larger than the corrections that we have seen since the very important stock market low in March 2003, which marked the beginning of a splendid rally for all global stock markets. And none have performed better than the resources-related stock markets. So what are the chances of that correction? Well, history says that markets are going to be quite vulnerable, particularly in the second and third quarters of 2006. Now, why, if that forecast is wrong, why might it be wrong? Well, the first point I would make is that an alarmingly high number of people are now talking about that correction. Now, those are not the people who are coming out massively bullish in polls conducted by Barron's on Wall Street and so on. And we'll get the usual, we have been seeing the usual year-end euphoric forecasts for the next year. But among heavyweight strategists, I have been a little bit concerned that a view I hold seems to be becoming increasingly mainstream. Now, that doesn't mean that it'll be wrong in the fact. In other words, a bigger correction than we've seen at any time since March 2003. But it means that the timing might be out. And as I believe I said yesterday, that if a lot of people feel that we will see that correction, they will start to take some money off the table in 2000 and I beg your pardon, in the first quarter. They'll begin to take some profits in the first quarter. And possibly the weakness that we have seen on Wall Street very recently is a precursor of that selling. But again, I haven't seen enough here to feel that this rally, overall rally, is over, particularly because of the leadership that we're actually seeing for the rally. Now, another factor, if the forecast for that second and/or third quarter correction is or certainly a bigger correction at some point next year is not fulfilled, is not realized. The most important factor overall, I suspect, would be liquidity. And we've certainly seen loads of liquidity sloshing around in the system. Central banks have been printing like mad, and some of that liquidity has, of course, helped to stimulate GDP growth, and some of that liquidity has also been the rising tide that lifts all boats in terms of markets. And the awareness of that liquidity has also been one of the key reasons why precious metals have been increasingly remonetized in the eyes of investors. And that's been a powerful theme here at Fuller Money over the last 3 years. Okay. Now, Wall Street, again, I've often talked about the Wall Street leash effect. If we get a significant correction on Wall Street, it'll affect all markets. Wall Street is in a secular bear market, as I have long defined here as a generational long process of valuation contraction. We've seen an enormous amount of valuation contraction recently, not least in this year, because U.S. companies, many U.S. companies, have been in survival mode since the stock market crash of 2000. That's hardly surprising. And what have they done? They become much more conservative. They have accumulated cash wherever possible, not the General Motors, but most of corporate America has been able to do this. And they have also, with the help of a very, very wise decision by the Bush administration to lower the tax on dividends and capital gains, they have also increased, companies have increased dividends, and that has helped to support the market. And earnings have improved since companies have turned more conservative. Now, so that's a quite positive development overall, and it does mean that Wall Street is a lot less overvalued vis-a-vis the rest of the world than it has been, well, say, than it was a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and so on. Now, those valuations, if we get another reasonably good year economically for the U.S., then that process of valuation contraction can continue without a major correction in stock markets. On the other hand, if rising interest rates cause a slowing in GDP growth, that may well cause the stock market to experience that correction that I've been talking about, and that would also erode some of the valuations on Wall Street. So these are a number of the factors that we need to monitor, and of course we monitor these by watching the charts. I think it's the best guide, as always. You'd expect me to say that, but I say it because I believe it to be true, and that's exactly the approach I'm going to use. Now, elsewhere in markets, for stock markets, I've been mentioning recently that something that I hadn't seen, that none of us had seen since the 1980s, particularly the late 1980s, is now very much evident, and that is that Japan is in the pole position in terms of short-term influences, and this may well become, I expect it will become, medium-term and even longer-term influences on stock market investors. And the example I've cited on Japan, which a lot of the older subscribers will remember, is that following the 1987 crash, everybody was talking about depression. Japan had been one of the very informed leading markets before the crash. It had a very, well, it also came down sharply, but it was a very small reaction in percentage terms relative to what happened in other markets around the world. And Japan promptly then began to move right back up and through the previous high. A terribly good lead indicator. for us at the time. And I do suspect that if we get that big correction, bigger correction than we've seen in the last 2.5 years, if we get that next year, that Japan, despite its terrific performance this year, will come down less. In all probability, South Korea will come down less and also lead the way back up again. Some of the emerging markets, though, are likely to do less well, partly because of liquidity, and they could suffer a bit more. Now, in terms of secular bull markets, again, two themes, two really big themes that I've been pushing for the last 3 years. Supply inelasticity meets rising demand. All the industrial resources are in secular bull markets. Therefore, those shares are interesting. And I'll borrow that very pithy, simple, but dramatically important comment by Donald Cox of Basic Points, and or from the Basic Points report, and that is, in terms of long-term strategic investing, we should not be buying companies that are competing with China and India. We should be buying shares in companies that are providing goods that China and India need to import. If you'd borne that in mind over the last 3 years, you would have done very well. I suspect those secular trends will certainly continue for the next 3 years and a good deal more. And a lot of people have been talking, now let me go on to this point. Is the commodity cycle, is it cyclical or is it secular? Well, I've written about this a lot. I want to keep a lid on the length of this. This audio, and I think that I'm very much of the view that it's a secular move, although we'll see some cyclical corrections within those secular trends. Now, next big theme, emerging markets. That's where we're likely to see the growth, and that will be reflected in share price, relative share price performance. And another big theme, and this ties right in with the produced goods that you can sell to China, Japan, and South Korea, which also both had long secular bear markets prior to 2003. So those are the really, really interesting areas, and my portfolio is almost entirely divided between resources and Asian, emerging markets. And it's going to stay that way. Now, moving on to government bonds. Again, I maintain that the secular bull market ended in June of 2003, and that we are in a predictably lengthy topping out process, predictably lengthy because of all the deflation fears, and that therefore government bond yields are in a lengthy base building process. Which will support a secular bull market in long-dated government bond yields, which is a, of course, a secular bear market in government bond prices. So I don't like this sector, except for the short selling opportunities that it will provide. The short selling opportunities will most likely arise following stock market sell-offs. And stock market sell-offs will lead to a temporary flight into bonds by some investors, pushing up prices, creating the short sell opportunities. And why am I so bearish? Well, look at all the money that governments are printing all over the world. It's not just the USA. So that has long-term inflationary implications. And of course, we'll see the least of that inflation in manufactured goods relative or due to globalization rather, and we'll also see less of it in wages, but you will get some wage inflation and you'll eventually get some manufactured goods inflation as well. Meanwhile, the cost of many other things is absolutely soaring, as you will know very well if you pay the household bills. And then lastly, these governments are trying to buy, well, how about, beg your pardon, are not buying, are borrowing on a 50-year basis, some of them. And I asked the rhetorical question over and over again, would they be borrowing on a 50-year basis if they didn't think that if they didn't think that interest rates, long-term interest rates, were going to rise over time? Of course not. Now, moving on to the currency situation, interest rates remain the hard fundamental in currencies. But I repeat my point, no country wants a strong currency. They're all printing, so this is competitive devaluation by stealth. That means that we are unlikely to see big dramatic trends in currencies. I do feel that the dollar is much closer to a peak than a low. That's a consensus view, which worries me a little bit. And I think my view also has become consensus that, and that view is that once the perception that interest rates are on their way back down is in the marketplace, that the dollar will really be quite vulnerable. If interest rates go up higher for longer, then the dollar will hold up reasonably well, relatively well, and may even appreciate a little bit further. But I don't expect big fireworks from currencies. There are a whole lot of currency traders out there. These are the biggest markets in the world, the most liquid markets in the world, of course, and many, many hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people employed to trade these things for financial institutions. And therefore, we will see lots of sharp, choppy swings in the markets, as we have certainly been seeing over the last year or more. My hunch is that the dollar will eventually get back down and test its lows. The dollar index will get back down and test its lows in that 80 region. And I would expect that decline to be evident well before the end of 2006. Now, elsewhere, gold and other precious metals, I've already said these continue to be remonetized in the eyes of investors. I think gold will be an absolutely top performer. Look at that chart of gold against the S&P, that ratio chart that I believe Owen posted in Comment of the Day here today. And therefore, I'm always interested in buying these precious metals following setbacks. My preferred trading vehicle is silver, because silver is high beta gold. And therefore, I'll get more trading opportunities in silver. But I'm interested in all the precious metals, which are in secular bull markets. And I really think that these secular bull markets are still very much in their early years, and are likely to last the better part of a generation, possibly even a bit longer. So, in terms of gold, and to put a number on it, whenever we see setbacks of $30 to $50, and we saw that recently, $50, possibly a little bit more than that, and these setbacks are buying opportunities. Industrial metals, again, the supply and elasticity meets rising demand theme. I think these are going to do exceptionally well. One point that I missed, I don't work from notes in here. They slow up the whole process, but I'll just drop back to stock markets again for a minute. And I mentioned that other big theme of mine, emerging markets, where we see the growth. I did mention that point. But while all emerging markets, virtually all emerging markets, have done extremely well over the last 3 years, there are some political trends that I don't really like that do worry me. And South America, Central and South America, we're getting the when a number of elections are coming up, there has been a push towards a sort of authoritarian left-wing type of governance, For instance, Chavez in Venezuela represents that and is using his petrodollars to an influence in South America to spread that, export that political philosophy. That worries me. I don't think that's good for investors. Another factor that we also see that problem in Russia, mouth-watering resources valuations, but it's an authoritarian kleptocracy, increasingly run by KGB types, old cronies of Vladimir Putin. China, I'm not interested in China because again we have this authoritarian capitalism, and as I've said over and over, you and I only make money in the stock market when they want us to, and we're not high on the list of priorities. So then if I mention the petrodollar currencies of the Middle East and also North Africa, they've done best of all. But these are genuine bubbles. They may well go on inflating, but it's not a game I wish to play. If you put a pistol at my head, I would certainly play it because oil's in a secular bull market. So I think that will generate the liquidity to push those markets higher. But that's not a game that I want to play. So I'll be concentrating on the Asian emerging markets, where we're going to get better governance more often than not, and it'll also be I'm talking about the largely democratic Asian markets. And in terms of the developing country Asian markets, India is far and away my favorite. I think Thailand's becoming increasingly interesting now after a 2-year consolidation. Excellent valuations there. And among the developed Asian countries, Japan and South Korea. Now, returning to the resources sector, and apologies for the jumping around a wee bit, I've covered the metals pretty thoroughly. Again, I want to repeat that I do think that the oil sector is bottoming out. I think that the oil problem, which a lot of people again are forecasting considerably lower oil prices, it tells you that a number of people are short, and of course, a number of them would like to see energy prices go down. So would I, for a good many reasons. So, but I don't believe that's going to happen. So I'm overweight in energy investments, and very much likely to remain so. In terms of soft commodities. Well, this is more of a casino, far more of a casino than the resources markets. We really need severe weather conditions in the growing regions to produce worthwhile gains. And when we do get severe weather conditions that damage crops significantly, we get spectacular gains. But that's something that's hard to predict. These are best played off the charts. On a short to medium term basis. But if you're a long-term investor, the last thing I would try to do, and the last thing I would try to do with anyone is to try to turn them into a trader. Those of you who are already trading and are drawn to trading can consider an array of possibilities. Those of you who are long-term investors by choice, by time limitations, and so on, have no need to go anywhere near soft commodities. And I think I pretty well covered most of the bases that I wished to. So I'll say it's just wrap up and say it's been a terribly exciting year. I have really enjoyed being in the hot seat throughout most of the year on your behalf. And I know I speak for Owen in saying that as well. And he's making an increasingly important contribution to the Floor Money Global Strategy Service. We really look forward to the challenge of 2006, and you can bet that we will put in the hours and the effort and the time and the focus and the concentration to do the very best on your behalf that we possibly can. can. And so it's now just for me to say I wish you a very happy, healthy, and prosperous New Year. All the best.